things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hello!
Heidi Hotay!
How's it going, Jenny?
Well, it's going really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been like our first time, because it's the first time in our new studio.
New podcast room.
I would sing along with you, but then we would have zero listeners.
We're here. Listen, we're here. We're set up. I survived the move.
It's beautiful in here. It is very aesthetic, and we have so many adorable, witchy ghost vibes in here right now.
Except for Tallulah, which Taylor hates.
Truly.
If you don't know who Tallulah is, go check out Instagram. She is on there.
And terrifying. And also, I would like to say, when you do get a chance to check out Tallulah on the good old IG, the spider, that MFR is real.
Oh, yeah. That's a real... It's a taxidermy spider.
It's stuffed.
Yeah. It has a leg in her eye.
I did not realize that this spider was real until I got here last week.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I hate it even more.
Now, listen, I know this is a weird flex for somebody who has a severe case of arachnophobia.
Like, bad.
Bad. Like, I can't live with spiders.
No.
But here's my thing. It is a giant tarantula. It is the king daddy of tarantulas. And I think to have, like, their king dead mounted in my spare room, like, really sends a clear message.
See, I think we're going to have a little bit of an Aragog issue where they're going to think that this is Mecca.
I'm the queen of the spiders.
Right. And they're like, she loves us. It's going to be like the little guys in Toy Story.
The claw. I love it. But so, yes, we are in the new podcast room. We survived the move. We do have, like, a little bit of an alarming situation happening right now.
We can't fix it.
We can't. So. There's no solution except for it to not be 90 degrees outside.
Right.
But it just so happens that in the new pod room, my neighbor's AC is right outside the window.
We thought it was Jenny's AC.
Yeah.
And so we were like, no big. We can just shut off the AC while we record. Well, Jenny went over to shut off the AC and nothing happened.
And it's still a rattling.
It's still a going. So we apologize if there is a noise in the background. Unfortunately,
there's no workaround.
It kind of just is what it is. Oh, hang in there with us. We will figure it out. Just, we're not going to be able to do that tonight.
No. No. Probably for the next couple episodes.
Yeah.
We will have to, like, find a new recording space for the hot season.
Yeah, for the hot areas.
For the hot.
Ooh, it shouldn't be this hot in Northern Indiana anyway.
No, but it is.
Ooh,
it is. It's either swampy or freezing.
Yeah, that's true. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in your wine?
There is. There's a bug in my wine. There is.
All right, let's pause, and I'm going to play music while Jenny fishes a bug out of her wine.
We haven't even decided which episode we're doing.
No, I know. I realize
okay.
that, too.
Okay. And we're back. I got mysterious floaties out of my wine glass. We decided what the fuck we were doing.
Which, oh man, why do we feel so new at this?
This is
episode 14.
And I feel like we're at one all over again. Like, I feel awkward.
It's the new space. We'll get used to it. Mm-hmm. We did some Palo Santo. We got, maybe the bad energy just hasn't gotten out yet.
That could be.
We haven't put our energy in it yet.
That is correct. We cleansed the space. It has not been recharged with good vibes yet. So, today is ooky spooky.
Paranormal times.
Back, it's a new cycle.
I can't believe how fast our last cycle went. I thought I blinked. And we were, like, back at paranormal. And I was like,
wait,
what?
What are we missing?
Right. I truly was like, we're missing something, even in the chaos of our lives, which has been very chaotic the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I believe the next 6 weeks are also going to be very chaotic.
It's probably just going to be chaotic.
Chaotic
forever.
Hashtag it.
You gotta spell it like that, though.
Oh, yeah. Love it. All right, yeah. So you're going first this week for paranormal.
Yes, all right. I am, and I'm excited.
Tell me everything.
I'm about to tell you about the Perrin family.
Ooh.
Do you know about them?
No.
Do you know Ed and Lorraine Warren?
The Warrens.
Do you know The Conjuring?
Yes. Oh, no, you made me watch it.
I made Ian watch it, too. He was miserable.
I was very scared.
He really threw a fit for, like, a second. He's like, I just don't want to watch this stuff, and you always make me watch it.
Oh, my gosh. I know it's not directly related to The Conjuring, but I came downstairs, like, a few months ago, and Ryan, my husband, was watching Annabelle 2, maybe.
Okay.
And I can't... I don't like watching that type of scary movie alone. I like slasher films. That's the kind of horror film that I enjoy. The ooky spooky demon stuff, I need a friend. And Ryan wasn't really paying attention to the movie, but I sat down and I got sucked into it. And I was mad at him.
Because now you're watching a scary movie you don't want
to
watch.
That he didn't ask me to watch. I just came downstairs.
Oh. It's like, you didn't invite me?
Yeah, and I was like, why are you not watching this? I'm scared. And he was like, I've already seen it. Why are you acting like this? But that was the last of the Ed and Lorraine kind of
series
that I watched.
They were pretty wild people. So, okay, let me start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. In January of 1971, the Perrin family moved into a 14-room farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island.
That's big.
It's huge. Can you imagine cleaning that?
No.
Ugh. Excited to get away from the larger city and settle into a simpler country lifestyle, the family sunk their entire savings and all their financial resources into the home. Roger and Carolyn Perrin had five daughters, Andrea, Nancy, Christina, Cindy, and April. Almost immediately, the family started to notice strange things in their new farm paradise. Things started small.
Nobody's ever said farm paradise before.
Well, listen. I'm sure to somebody out there, this is a paradise.
Sure.
Things started off really small, as they do in big hauntings.
Yep.
So, like, a broom wasn't where she left it. Like, the tea kettle would sound, but the oven is off and there's no water in it and nobody is in there. Little piles of dirt in the middle of a room that Carolyn just cleaned.
Mm-mm.
Again, no respect for housekeeping these ghosts.
No.
Makes me so mad. The girls also began to notice spirits around the home, though they were plentiful. For the most part, they were pretty harmless. Just like your very run-of-the-mill little ghosty activity. However, there were a couple that were incredibly angry.
Ooh.
Andrea, the oldest daughter, wrote a series of books called House of Darkness, House of Light, detailing the parents' plight while living here. The family began to be assaulted with nauseating stenches. First, they thought it was just like old garbage, and then it smelled like rotting flesh. Like, they thought mice died in the wall, but then it got stronger. And then eventually the odor turned to sulfur.
Oh, that is not a great sign.
No, and it's an awful smell.
Right.
Just...
You can't mistake that. That's not like, oh, maybe it's a dead mouse, maybe it's like...
It's sulfur. Rotten eggs.
That's the devil, my friends.
Yes, ma'am. The children were being dragged off their beds by their feet. Beds would rise off the floor. Clocks would stop at 3:07 a.m., which was noted in the film. Roger would just... would describe a cold, stinking presence following him into the dirt floor basement of the home.
Is Roger dad?
Roger is dad.
Okay.
So all of the family members imposed a rule that no one was going to the basement for any reason whatsoever because things were just so oppressive down there. However, the HVAC system that was installed in this house would break down frequently.
Well, yeah, it was the 70s. Shit is new.
Yeah. No, it's... But... Roger would go down and investigate, and nothing would be wrong. He would go down there, he would tinker around with it for 30 minutes until he, like, felt too uneasy, and he'd go back up the stairs, and then it would just work.
Blech.
Yeah. There was no reason for it to break down. Carolyn, then, after all these, like, things started to get a little hairy, researched the history of the home and discovered that it had been in the same family for 8 generations, and many of them have died under horrible or mysterious circumstances. Several of the children had drowned in a nearby creek. One was murdered. A few family members hung themselves in the attic.
A few?
A few. Like, more than one.
That is too many.
Well, one too many. Three too many.
A few too many.
Yeah.
A handful, if you will.
So, aside from all of this, there was one spirit in particular that was deemed the worst of all, and that was the spirit of Bathsheba.
King Demon Daddy Boy.
Yes.
No thanks.
Except she was a witch.
Oh, okay.
The spirit perceived herself as a mistress of the house, and she resented the competition Carolyn posed for that position. So heads like messing with the home, messing with the housework, stopping the clocks. After many years of increasingly frightening experiences, the Perrin family sought the help from the most infamous paranormal investigators of all time, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Mom and Dad.
Spooky mom, spooky dad. Ed was a World War II veteran and a former police officer who became a self-professed demonologist after studying the subject on his own. His wife, Lorraine, claimed to be a clairvoyant and a medium who was capable of communicating with the demons that Ed discovered. In 1952, Ed and Lorraine founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. They quickly gained notoriety as respected paranormal investigators after their initial investigation of the Amityville hauntings.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's a big one. That might have to be like a mashup.
Yeah,
that we do.
Yeah, because that's true crimey and paranormal.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
That's a good. We'll look into it.
Mm-hmm. Their two most famous cases, however, were heavily popularized by the Conjuring franchise, a series of movies that focuses on Ed and Lorraine's experiences exorcising demons from two possessed families. Though the movies seem over-dramatized and impossible to believe, the Warrens maintain that all of the events depicted actually transpired. So, though Ed died in 2006, Lorraine was a consultant on the film and claims that she didn't let the directors take any more dramatic license than was necessary.
I love that.
I do too.
I truly, if we can have films have a part of the actual people who were there and that were taking place, I truly just enjoy the fact that there was somebody on set that said, it's a go.
Yeah. Or like, no, that's not how it happened. It happened this way.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
It's more like a documentary then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, over the 10... Oh, I lost my spot.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You lost your words a little bit earlier. Sorry. And I had to do my company-wide webinar last week. And I have like 400 people in my company. And I could not say the words waste receptacle to save my life.
Just stick with trash can.
So I stumbled over waste receptacle probably 6 or 7 times, and all I could see was my boss in the comments saying, trash can, trash can. But at that point, I couldn't give it up.
You committed to it. You were going to fix the mistake you made.
All the time. But in like live situations, all I can do is laugh. Be like, sorry.
You can't edit out live decisions.
Nope. Sorry, continue. Okay.
So, I found my space.
Yes, good.
Over the 10 years that the family lived in the house, the Warrens made multiple trips to investigate. At one point, Lorraine conducted a seance to attempt to contact the spirits that were possessing the family. The movie portrays an exorcism taking place by Ed. However, Lorraine did say that they would never attempt an exorcism because they're not ordained.
Okay.
So, she conducted a seance to attempt to contact the spirits that were possessing the family. And during the seance, Carolyn became possessed, speaking in tongues and rising from the ground in her chair. Andrea claims to have secretly witnessed the seance. And in her book wrote, I thought I was going to pass out. My mother began to speak a language not of this world and a voice not of her own. Her chair levitated and she was thrown across the room. Though, after the seance, Roger kicked the Warrens out because he thought his wife had a nervous breakdown, had a mental breakdown, was really concerned about her stability.
Sure.
And according to Andrea, the family continued to live in the house due to financial instability until they were finally able to move in 1980.
How many years after they moved in?
9.
That's a lot.
It's a long time.
Especially for children. That is your entire childhood.
Oh, yeah. To be traumatized and, yeah. At which point, the spirits were silenced and the hauntings ceased. At least for the parents. So when they left the house, nothing attached to them and it didn't follow them. A few other owners also bought it, although many didn't last very long. Most recently, Corey and Jennifer Heinzen A husband and wife team of paranormal investigators purchased the home. They allege that the hauntings are still active through knocks and footsteps and flashing lights, and that although they haven't felt any particularly malicious or violent spirits, they always keep their wits about them and they remain aware of their surroundings. So let's kind of go through the dark history roster of spirits that called this home. And Taylor, I need you to not freak out.
Okay.
But we're about to talk about people from like 1770 through like 1900s. And I have the original obituaries.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
They will be on our Facebook page.
Oh my gosh, I'm so hyped.
It's like the original like scanned publications. You're gonna love. Okay.
Yay!
So the Arnold family founded the homestead circa early 1800. There are a lot of Arnolds I'm gonna toss around here in a second. Right. It was a really prominent family. But we're going to kind of start with Mr. John Arnold and his wife. So Mr. John Arnold was born in 1773. He died in 1837, and he was the son of Edwin and Norma Arnold. So the first death in the house is Mrs. John Arnold. John Arnold married Mrs. John Arnold, which I know sounds stupid.
Right.
But there are so many John Arnolds.
Okay.
That there's a little bit of conflicting information here.
Right.
So in the House of Darkness trilogy, Andrea writes of Mrs. John Arnold's suicide in the farmhouse. We're told that, and I quote, "Only one thing is known for certain. Far more than a century ago, Mrs. John Arnold decided to claim her life at the age of 93 years and was discovered cold and gray, as stiff as the wood from which she was found dangling in the rafters in the barn."
93?
Yes.
How did she even get up there?
Well, so there's a book called The Black Book of Burrillville.
Uh-huh.
Which is a collection of all of the oddest and most mysterious deaths in the Harrisville, Burrillville area.
We need that.
We do need it.
We need that.
Yes. But don't worry. You can go through it online.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So, in the Black Book of Burrillville, an entry for a Susan Arnold notes under the heading Suicide by Hanging, April 13th, 1866, at 50 years of age, wife of John Arnold. This is most likely the source of our haunting. And like I said, we'll post the obituary on the Insta page. However, there's another Arnold, Abigail Cook Arnold, who has an obituary that also matches it. She was 93 when she died, but she had her cause of death listed as old age. So although that matches the age that Andrea Perrin reports in her book, the manner of death matches with Susan. So take that with what you will. It was probably Susan. But there's just so many stinking Arnolds back then.
Right.
Including Mr. John Arnold himself, son of Edwin and Nora. According to Andrea, the master of the house made the same mistake as his dearly departed, and he climbed into the eaves of the house and drank horse liniment, following his wife into death.
Okay.
This John Arnold, however, was the son of Edwin Arnold, but was not the husband of Susan.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the family tree is, like, really looking like a wreath right now.
Right.
Since Edwin Arnold did own the house for a number of years, it's reasonable to presume that John spent his early childhood in the home. And according to Mr. Arnold's obituary in the Pasquag Herald, it is said that for several years he had not been in good health and latterly became despondent. In a fit of despondency, he took a dose of Paris Green, and the efforts of a physician to save his life was unavailing. Paris Green is a highly toxic crystalline powder that was used as a pigment in paints.
Mm-hmm.
So, next is Prudence Arnold. This is sad.
Prue! Oh,
Prudence Arnold. In her book, Andrea writes about her mother researching the history of the Harrisville house, and she wrote, "Prudence Arnold, so young, so few details of her life left to punctuate that tragic passing. It was later discovered that she had been raped and murdered by a local farmhand who then took his own life." Prudence, in reality, was the orphan child of Eber Arnold? But he died when she was one. And Charlotte Arnold, who passed when she was three. So as an orphan, she was taken into the custody of Anon Richardson.
Okay.
When Prudence was 11, William E. Knowlton, 22, followed her up to the second floor of her home and cut her throat with a straight razor.
Oh my God.
So deep that it nearly decapitated her.
Oh, poor sweet baby.
A jury of inquest was held on January 31st, 1849, in which it was discovered that he killed her out of love and jealousy because she promised to marry him 4 months prior.
She was 11.
Ooh, correct. And he was 22. Can we not?
Don't do that.
Can we not?
Don't do that.
Don't hit on kids. No. I find it so easy to understand.
Right.
But, okay.
22. I'm sure your prospects were just fine.
Yeah. And he was hanged. Oh. He was found guilty and hanged.
Good.
Which is more justice than what we really get nowadays.
Truly.
So, Jarvis Smith. There are a few deaths associated with the house that are labeled mysterious.
Ooh.
Two of which involve people freezing to death.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's New England, right?
Yeah, it's pretty chilly. So one of these people was Jarvis Smith, and the other was Edwin Arnold.
Okay, all right.
Perrin mentions in her books, by way of her father, two men who froze to death underneath the blacksmith shop. Edwin Arnold, a former owner of the farmhouse, died of exposure in 1803 while walking home one night. He'd been missing for 7 weeks until a hunter discovered his body.
Wow.
And his remains were found about a mile and a half down the road, leaning against a stone wall of the Smith Aldrich farm. It appears that he had been walking across farms, taking a shortcut home. He lay down to rest, but never woke up. 2 years prior, the body of Jarvis Smith was found in a rickety shed beside the highway on the property of the Harrisville farmhouse.
Okay.
Smith had recently been on trial for the murder of a Britain Rounds, which is a name, Britain Rounds, in October 1898, of which he was acquitted. He had apparently been liquored up the night before and came to rest in the shed, which had stood about 200 feet from the farmhouse. And like Edwin, he never woke up.
Wow.
So last but not least, we're going to talk about the big bad Bathsheba Sherman.
Let's do it.
Yeah, big bad, but like maybe not big and bad, actually. So, big bad bit first. According to the Conjuring franchise and Andrea Perrin's tell-all, Bathsheba was an evil Satan-worshipping witch who sacrificed her baby by impaling a sewing needle into the base of its skull.
Oh.
She is described as bitter, vindictive, hateful, and unholy by some dude named Mr. McEachern.
Same.
Just so some dude said it, so it's true.
Right.
He claims to have firsthand knowledge that Bathsheba would starve herself and beat her staff regularly, yet she was a ravishing beauty.
So he hit on her. She said no.
And he's like, you're a witch now.
Yep.
Correct.
That's 100% what happened.
That is exactly what happened. Perrin associated Bathsheba Sherman with the Arnold family and living on the farm. An example while describing the details of an inquest into the murder of a baby, Perrin states, but Bathsheba was an Arnold and she lived on the Arnold estate at that age, so there was every indication to believe that the event occurred in Carolyn's own home.
All right.
Lorraine Warren is often credited as being the first to name Bathsheba as a witch in the demonic entity haunting the Harrisville farmhouse, having gained the name through a psychic vision. However, Perrin makes it quite clear in her book that her mother, Carolyn, is the one who first pointed a finger at Bathsheba as a source of evil. When describing how her mother had been searching through the archives in the village of Chepachet, Perrin states, they soon discover the identity of Carolyn's arch-rival and nemesis, one evil mistress of the house, Bathsheba Sherman. Based on what they learned of her life, she would become the principal subject in death, the likely culprit, the bad witch. Bathsheba Sherman, born Thayer, was born in 1812 and was claimed to have been related to Marytown Easley. Does that name sound familiar? She's one of the witches burned during the Salem witch trial in 1692.
Ah.
51 years after Bathsheba's birth in 1863, Bathsheba married a rich farmer under the surname Sherman and gave birth to his child when he was a week old. Her husband caught her attempting to sacrifice her baby to the devil. Exposed, Bathsheba climbed to the top of the tree, protested her love for Satan. In my notes, I wrote Stan. She protested her love for Stan and cursed all those who would take her land. Bathsheba then flung herself from the branch of a tree with a noose around her neck and committed suicide.
And that's the, like, cover of the movie, or the movie poster.
Yes, that is the plot of the movies, Bathsheba was a witch and she murdered her child and she possessed Carolyn to murder her children too.
Aha. Yeah, I remember that.
However, here's the history. The actual real facts.
Yes.
Undeniably, Bathsheba Sherman has suffered the most damage to her reputation from these supernatural retellings. In fact, she was born to Ephraim Thayer and Hannah Taft, making her a Thayer, not an Arnold. She married Judson Sherman and moved from the Thayer farm to the Sherman farm, where she lived out the rest of her days. They had four children, Julia, Edward, Herbert, and George. None of their deaths were listed in the Black Book of Burleville, and none were suspicious. Bathsheba died on May 25th, 1885, of sudden paralysis, which was probably a stroke. Her husband, Judson, died in 1881, and again, nothing suspicious about his death is noted. Bathsheba married Benjamin Green a year later, but remained on the Sherman farm. Upon her death, Bathsheba was laid to rest in the Riverside Cemetery next to her first husband. Her funeral services were officiated by a reverend and a pastor of the Fourth Baptist Church of Providence. She never lived or worked on the Arnold estate, nor was she associated with the Arnold family at all. In truth, there's very few records about her aside from like census records and an obituary. There's no birth or death certificate because they just weren't issued at that time.
Weird.
Yeah, just nobody cared. Mr. McEachern is a figure whose existence is probably a fabrication in the book. So, I don't think that debunking, like, this particular part of the haunting discredits the entire experience that the family had.
Right.
In fact, if the evil presence that oppressed the parent family is not Bathsheba, it would be pretty crucial information to know.
Sure.
Because as we all know, if there's a demonic presence, like, the best way to exorcise a demon is to learn its name so you can have power
over it.
Over it. I'm not saying that the spirit of, like, a vengeful witch isn't haunting the farm, but if it is, it's not Bathsheba Sherman, and a priest, no matter how strong, would be powerless against, like, a witch ghost, because you can't, how are you going to exorcise a witch? Like, they don't adhere to that power that you're trying to wield against them. So, that's my story about the haunting of the parent family.
Wow.
Yeah. So
fun.
Historical. I thought
Ookie
you would like
spooky.
It.
Spooky.
Ookie spooky, but also
facts.
Ghost facts.
I love a ghost fact.
Same.
So funny that you should say that, because I also have ghost facts for you.
Ooh, we're getting so good at telling the truth.
It's weird.
I love it.
So I love that neither of us told each other what we were doing today. And sometimes we like give each other like little hints mm-hmm. and like this, that, and the other, but we went in blind today.
Yeah.
So I kept it very close to home.
I have no idea.
I am doing the Old Whitley County Jail, also known as the Columbia City Jail.
No, hold on, wait, that gave me goosebumps. I have had so many spooky things happen to me.
Really?
Okay, hold on. Ew. That made my molars itchy. Okay, this is so spooky.
Okay.
Tell me all about it. This is local.
Yeah,
for
this
us.
Is super local. Like, it'll take us maybe 20 minutes to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we're just gonna start at the beginning. So, this is better known to us as the Columbia City Jail. We know it because it is actually a haunted house attraction every Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And I went for the first time this last season. And I had never been there. And in my head, I thought it's like the haunted castle or whatever.
Like
it's not
book.
Really a castle. Like, when I got there, I was like, well, this is a jail? It's like a real jail?
We told you it was a haunted jail.
I know.
You didn't believe it.
No, I didn't. So it's super, super cool. Would highly recommend. So it is located near and dear to our hearts in Columbia City, Indiana. The first public building in Columbia City took the form of a log jail that was built in 1840, and it was located on the same basically like same plot of land.
Ooh.
So just a couple of feet
off.
It cost $490 to build this log jail.
Woo!
Yep.
I could build a couple of jails.
And it was burnt down in 1855 by a prisoner awaiting trial. He was like, oh yeah, this log jail right now, bye.
This is a tinderbox and I will burn it to the ground.
Watch me. So a new jail was built in 1875, which cost $5,244 to build. So
ooh, inflation.
Quite a jump. It is 3 stories tall and was once a beautiful building. It was designed by J.C. Johnson, known for his Indiana jail designs.
Whoa!
I know. I didn't know that you could...
I didn't know we were in the presence of a celebrity.
Right. A specialty architect.
Ooh.
This quote comes from a site that I found, and I don't think I wrote it down, but it says, "This once lovely 3-story brick building has been described as displaying the highly ornamented Second Empire style of architecture, featuring a mansard roof, elaborate dormers, and carved sandstone details."
I will say it is a beautiful building.
It is. We'll definitely post pictures of it. When it was built, it was probably used as both a jail and a home for the sheriff. Mm. And this is where we get the term jailhouse.
Oh, okay.
Fun facts. So the main character of our story is a man named Charles Butler. He was an inmate in 1883. He had a horrible temper and would bully people often. Bully is in air quotes because I just thought, why are we describing an actual asshole as a bully, but whatever.
We can just call him an asshole.
Yeah. He also had a drinking problem and abused his wife and son frequently.
Love that.
Big great bully.
He's just like a little disrespectful.
Right. Ugh. So disrespectful, in fact, that he was arrested 27 times between 1877 and 1883.
Man, he was busy, huh?
Busy.
He had a lot of shit going on in those 6 years. A
lot of things to do.
Yeah.
People didn't have TV back then.
Just bored.
No entertainment. While he was imprisoned, he found out that his wife had taken their son and had moved to Columbus, Ohio to live with his aunt and uncle. This infuriated him, and he swore vengeance to all of his cellmates, all his buddies.
God.
He was released, and when he saw his wife, he shot her in the back as she tried to flee, and he was taken to the Kosciuszko County Jail and then moved to Willie County Jail.
That mother fluffer.
Yeah.
Ew.
What a dick.
Yeah.
She was like running away from him and had their son in front of him, and he was 4. His name was Henry, and she was trying to protect their son.
Oh, yeah. Oh God.
So let me fast forward real quick and see if I mention anything else about that. So I don't think I have it in my notes, but when he shot her, the police came, and he was waiting on the front porch for them.
Just chill?
Just super chill. And he was like, yeah, she's in there. And, yeah, I mean, he was, like, so ready to go to jail for this again? All over again. I don't know if he just thought...
Who has the energy to hold on to a grudge for that long?
Right. It's hateful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me find my place again. Okay, in 1884, Charles and 3 other inmates waited until the sheriff and his family were away and out of the jail, and they were able to escape. So, prisoner Ed Carter, who was incarcerated for counterfeiting, was a carpenter, and they imprisoned him in the same prison he built.
What? He's like, listen, I know the weak points here, bud.
Yeah, he was like, I know how to get out of here.
I'm gonna build a jail without a trap door. Are you crazy?
So he was a part of the crew that built the jail in 1875, and he informed Charles of a soft stone in the ceiling of their cell.
Surprise. Oh my God.
I'm telling you.
Nobody uses critical thinking.
No, no. Criminals are too smart.
Yeah.
We put them too close together when they're in jail.
They just get better.
Ugh, they learn from each other.
Yes, they do.
So they were able to loosen bricks enough to squeeze through and get onto the roof. And they had tied sheets together and were able to lower them onto the ground, lower themselves onto the ground.
I can just hear like the neat, 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 neat.
Right. I know that this is historically accurate, but in my head, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
100%.
They've got the red and white, or like the black and white striped jumpsuit.
Absolutely. And they're all like in uniform, like going down the same. Oh, goodness. Okay. So they had sheets together, were able to lower themselves onto the ground. The sheriff blamed himself for leaving during the night.
Well.
And offered a $200 reward for Charles. He was found drunk AF in a bar in Ohio.
Oh my god.
And taken back to Whitley County, where he was tried again. And this time he was sentenced to death.
Good job, Indiana.
Right. So he was hanged on October 15th, 1884. Shortly after 9 a.m., Charles was given brandy to help calm his nerves. At 11:50 a.m., the sheriff took Charles Butler out of the jail and walked him into the scaffold in front of those who received a ticket. You had to have a ticket to hangings.
What?
Yep. Those on the jury, family members, and law enforcement officers were all ones who received tickets. However, an audience of about 200 people gathered about the lawn. When the sheriff sprang open the trap door, Charles was standing too close to the hinges, and it prevented him from having a perfect fall, and his neck did not break.
So did they let him go?
No.
Oh. That used to be a thing.
Really?
When they used gallows to hang people. If, like, they hung you and your neck didn't break and you didn't die, it was like God had, like, said that you were gonna live, so they would cut you down and you're free to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's not what happened.
Okay.
So, Charles hung there for about 2 minutes before he took his own legs and swung them up and swung them back down hard enough again to break his own neck. The coroner pronounced him dead 8 minutes later.
Oh?
They were going to just let him hang there.
Forever.
And strangle to death.
Oh my god.
Right.
Ew, gross. Indiana, why are we like this?
It goes back a long way.
Yeah.
So it is said that the spirits of Charles and the sheriff both haunt the jail now.
Mm.
The sheriff had struggled with the memory of Charles not dying immediately, and his spirit now haunts the jail looking for Charles. And the sheriff went until his deathbed, and this haunted him the rest of his life. And I don't believe the sheriff ever had anybody hung again after this.
Wow.
So at some point in the 1970s or 80s, the jail was rebuilt a couple blocks away, and the second jail was renovated to hold county offices. I can't imagine.
You work here now.
Like a little teeny bopper in like a pencil skirt trying to just go to work like in an 1875 old jail.
Uh-huh.
No. So it held county offices until 1985 when the heating system finally died. And that's when they were like, meh.
Guess we'll move you.
So all the offices were moved out of the building at that point. The building was then sold to the owner of a car dealership next door in 1991. The new owner had made the jail into a haunted house used from September through the end of October every Halloween. Many local citizens believe that the city should repurchase the building and restore it to its former glory, and it is being seriously considered. But for now, yes, it's empty most of the year until the Halloween season. From a lot of things that I read, the proud citizens of Columbia City believe that this being used as a haunted attraction or a tourist is, like, cheap and just unsavory, but I had a great time.
It is by far one of the best haunted houses, like, in our area. It's the scariest.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was so fun. And the guys that run it were very kind and very, they asked us, like, was this your first time here? The girls I was with said no, they'd been there before, but I hadn't. And he was like, you're gonna have a great time. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice, it sounds weird to say, but wholesome experience, knowing that I'm about to get the shit scared out of me.
And but he was like, I just want you gals to have a good time.
You're gonna have a good time. Okay, so I wanted to share some haunted experiences with you.
Ooh, yes.
The spirit of Charles Butler is said to be the strongest, although there are more. One of the spirits seems to be related to electricity and technology, so cameras will sometimes shut down or not take pictures at all, batteries die without warning, that sort of thing. So there's a story from the Indiana Ghost Trackers, and this is going to be written by a woman named Jennifer Zemates. Oh, sorry, Jennifer, if this is wrong. They were taking a break in costume on the second floor. A chainmail costume moved on its own, and the sound of a male voice talking indistinguishable words came from the corner of the room.
Ooh. I don't like disembodied voices.
No. And you have to think that these are ghost trackers, and then somebody's in costume, so I assume that they were
like workers,
a part of that acting crew.
Yeah.
So they're used to all of this. I would imagine that it would have to be something pretty out of the ordinary
to catch their attention.
Right.
Yeah.
So Jennifer was sitting down for a rest in the dark in one of the first floor cells, the second cell to the last in the cell block. She felt a cold, invisible hand grasp her leg and move up her leg to her knee. She yelled for a light to see if she could see this cheeky entity, and no one was there.
Ooh.
In one of the front rooms, six investigators heard the sound of a man laughing, the sound of running feet, and the sound of knocking, and saw the curtains move by themselves like someone brushed against them.
Oh, I don't like that.
Nope. Footsteps and scraping along the walls have been reported by workers in the building. A blurry apparition has been known to appear and touch hands and shoulders.
Don't touch me. Keep your hands to yourself.
Sexual harassment.
I just don't.
No. And finally, moving curtains and the feeling of being watched.
I hate that feeling.
Nope. I don't like it.
Mm-mm.
It was really adorable. So while I was doing research, I went to their Facebook page to see if there was anything. And they are actually planning something for this summer.
They are?
To celebrate the end of quarantine. So whatever that is, we'll see if we can go.
That would be so much fun.
Right. But in the meantime, while we were in quarantine, they made this, it was so cute. It was like found footage. And they were like, we found this cell phone that had been broken, and we had our tech guy look into it and see what they had captured, and they captured some very scary footage. If you don't like being scared, turn this off right now. And they showed this, I mean, it's like a 7-minute long video of people who are going through the haunted hotel or the haunted jail, mm-hmm. and like this entity following them, but they put a lot of time and effort into it. I just thought it was a cool,
I love that,
kind of local thing for them to do.
Yeah,
but if you're local, I highly suggest going to the haunted jail in Columbia City.
It's a good one.
Yeah, and it's, surprise, it's a real jail.
And surprise, really actually haunted, not right. just by like Boy Scouts with right. chainsaws.
Charles Butler.
Charles? What are you doing out here, Charles?
So that is the story of the Columbia City Jail.
I love it. Thank you. I love these little local things. Because we have, like, some listeners who are not from here.
Right. And the last couple that I've done have been deep and dark. Mm-hmm. And I just needed to not do something deep and dark.
We needed something a little light. We need to lighten the vibe.
Right.
A smidge.
Right.
We were getting pretty deep.
Not to say that we won't get that deep again. It will happen. It just was a 2 episodes in a row for me. I was doing deep, dark things that I was like, oh, Lord, I
can't.
Mental
health break.
Yeah, and I knew that this didn't have quite as much
stabby stab
to it.
Yeah.
That I was going to be, like, going down a rabbit hole for days. Mm-hmm. So I was able to do this in like one day. Uh-huh. It was very nice.
I love that for you. I actually had to change this. The parent family was not what I was originally
going
to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going to tell me what you were going to originally do?
I'm not going to, because it is going to be our folklore episode.
Ooh, fun. Okay.
Yeah. So I just scratched the surface. And I got into, like, old historical societies of the area. The family is still prominent in the area.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, we need to wait.
Yeah, we're just going to put this on pause.
We're going to put this on pause. We're getting into folklore. So keep an eye. It's going to be good.
Ooh, I'm excited. Yeah.
So, cool. Little teaser.
All right. Well, if you like us, go find us on Instagram. We have a Facebook page. Go find us on Twitter. If you say Sochmeads, I'm going to stab you.
You're the one who says Sochmeads, and now I can't stop saying it.
I said it one time.
I said it to my staff. I'm like, hey, did anybody post on the Sochmeads today?
I'm so sorry.
I can't stop. It just has to be a thing now because I can't get over it.
All right, so go find us on the Sochmeads. And if you like us, we would love for you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If that's where you listen to us, that really, really super helps us a lot, more than you realize.
If you're going to leave a bad review, like, at least make it funny.
Yeah.
Something that like Beach Too Sandy will cover.
Right. Yeah. Zero stars.
If I could.
All right.
That's our deal today.
Yeah. We'll see you on the flip side for true crime next week.
See you on the flip flop, loser.
The flippity flop. All right. Bye.
Bye.